was kidnapped.
Shvevat.
Like a dog
who takes food from the kitchen
in the absence of the proprietor.
Te
of you.
Tekta
trapasya.
Because you are shameless.
Phalam
adya.
I shall give you the result today.
Jugupsithasya.
Of you, the most abominable.
Yachami.
I shall punish you.
Kala
eva.
Like death.
Kartuhu.
Of you,
who are the performer of all sinful activities.
Alangriya
virya.
But I,
being omnipotent,
never fail in my
attempt.
Translation.
Lord
Ramachandra
said to
Ravan,
you
are the
most
abominable
of the
man-eaters.
Indeed,
you are
like the stool.
You
resemble
a dog,
for
as a dog
steals eatables
from the kitchen
in the
absence of the
householder,
in
my absence,
you kidnapped
my wife,
Sita
Devi.
Therefore,
as Yamaraj
punishes
sinful man,
I should
also punish you.
You
are most
abominable,
sinful,
and shameless.
Today,
therefore,
I,
whose attempt
never
fails,
shall
punish you.
Purport
by Srila
Prabhupada.
Nacha
dhaivat param
bhalam.
No
one can
surpass the
strength
of the
transcendence.
Ravana
was so sinful
and shameless
that he
did not know
what the result
would be of
kidnapping Mother
Sita,
the pleasure
potency
of Ramachandra.
This is
the disqualification
of the Rakshasas.
Asatyam
apratishtam
te jagat ahur
anishwaram.
The
Rakshasas
are unaware
that the
Supreme Lord
is the ruler
of the
creation.
They
think that
everything has
come about by
chance
or
accident,
and that
there is no
ruler,
king, or
controller.
Therefore,
the Rakshasas
act
independently
as they like,
going
even so far
as to
kidnap the
goddess of
fortune.
This
policy
of Ravana's
is
extremely
dangerous
for the
materialist.
Indeed,
it brings
ruin
to the
materialistic
civilization.
Nonetheless,
because
atheists
are
rakshasas,
they dare to
do things
that are
most abominable,
and thus they are
punished without
fail.
Religion
consists
of the
orders of the
Supreme Lord,
and one
who carries out
these orders
is religious.
One who
fails to carry
out the Lord's
orders
is
irreligious,
and he has
to be punished.
Om
Gyanati Vrindasya Agnan
Janasala Kaya
Chakshurumitam
Minatas Mishi
Guru Nono
Om Shivaya
Krishna Vistaya Buddha
Vishimadi
Bhakti Vedanta
Swamini Tinamine
Namaste
Saraswati Devi
Gurubani
Pacharine
Nirvishisha
Shunyavadi
Paschatya Desha
Tarine
Vanshakalpatru
Vishya Kripa
Sindhu Eva Chapati
Tanambhavane
Vyo
Vaishnavibhyo
Namo Namo.
Translation
again if you like
to repeat.
Lord Ramachandra
said to Ravan,
You are the most abominable of the man-eaters. Indeed, you are like the stool. You resemble a dog. For as a dog steals eatables from the kitchen, in the absence of the householder, in my absence, you kidnapped my wife, Sita Devi. Therefore, as Yamaraj punishes sinful men, I shall also punish you. You are most abominable, sinful, and shameless. Today, therefore, I, whose attempt never fails, shall punish you. So here, Lord Ramachandra covers Ravana of insults, very colorful insults. And of course, Ravana deserves all of them. And it's interesting because in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhus explain how of the different type of personality, four main personality that Krishna manifests, Rama especially is known as Dhirodatta. Dhirodatta, it's a type of personality who is very grave, very serious, very stately, very dignified, also very merciful. And generally that's the like default setting for Ramachandra's way of being, mentality, and how he projects himself to the world. He's a king, so he's very royal, very aristocratic, very sober. But here he's taking up more of what the personality known as Dhirodhata, which is the personality which is inimical, which is angry, which is very hot-tempered, restless. And it's explained, the Acharyas explained that due to his inconceivable energy, Krishna and his other forms can harmonize this apparently contradictory mentality or personalities. So one is Dhirodatta, then you have Dhira Lalita. Dhira Lalita means somebody who is very funny, very light, very jolly, very naughty. Then there is Dhira Prashanta, somebody who is very peaceful, obedient, obsequious. And then you have Dhirodhata, somebody who is very angry and very heavy. So Ramachandra here is demonstrating the personality of Dhirodhata. And again, it's fully justified and is fully in tune with the situation. And he uses these expressions such as Purushada Purisha, first line. Purushada Purisha. Purisha means excrement. And Purushada means man-eater or cannibal, so which is a reference to Rakshasas. So he's saying, you are like the feces of a Rakshasa. So in other words, since if the Rakshasa eats men, the feces of a Rakshasa is a digested man, which is a great insult. It's an insult for anybody, but to speak of a Rakshasa. The Rakshasa is hard man, not in consciousness, but at least in terms of physical power, mystical power, influence. In fact, You remember Ravana when he asked for his invincibility, immortality, or at least invulnerability, he did not even consider asking protection or invincibility from men, because he considered men so low, so insignificant, so negligible, that he didn't even ask, I want to be invulnerable to men. So, Rakshasa are literally higher in the food chain because they eat men. And there's another insult. Shravat, like a dog. And Srila Prabhupada helpfully expands this shravat. The verse only says shravat. But then Srila Prabhupada explained, like a dog who steals food from the kitchen when the householder is absent. So he helps us to give the whole picture. What does it mean, like a dog? Taking something unauthorized. And like a dog, because dogs are not very, very bold animals, very courageous animals. So if they steal only when the person is not there. Like a tiger, probably if a tiger was angry, it would go inside the village, it would go inside the house, it would go inside the kitchen, either people are there or not. But the dog waits for the master of the house to go, and then he goes into the kitchen and steals. So in other words, you're like a dog, you don't even have the dignity of fighting with me for my wife. You arrange this whole plan, this whole strategy to make me away from my house, from my hut, from my cottage in the forest, so that you could steal Sita Devi when she was alone. So it's really undignified. And all of you, most of you know the story. There was this whole machination by Ravana. He wanted to humiliate Rama. He wanted to kidnap Sita. By the way, Ravana had a collection of wives from all over the universe. He had taken many, many, many wives, and so he wanted to add Sita to his harem. He heard that she was really, really, really beautiful. Of course, she is the goddess of fortune. But also, he wanted to humiliate Rama. So he made this whole plan, and he went to. First of all, he made the plan when he heard that in Dandakaranya, Rama killed so many Rakshasas. So at that time, he went to Maricha. Maricha was another Rakshasa, but was a retired Rakshasa. He was living as an ascetic. He was living as a sadhu. I mean, I don't know how you can call a Rakshasa a sadhu. But he was living like a retired in the jungle somewhere. And he had stopped doing the typical Rakshasa activities. So Ravana, first time he went there, and he said, I want you to help me defeat Rama. And Maricha said, look, this is not a good idea at all. Because Maricha had an experience, actually twice experience of fighting with Rama. Once when he and somebody else, Subahu, another Rakshasa, they were disturbing these yagyas, as often we find in Vedic literature under Srimad Bhagavatam, these different demons disturb these yagyas. They really like to create trouble to innocent brahmanas. They really like to interrupt religious performances. So Maricha had attacked this, but then Rama, who was there to protect the yagya, with one arrow hit Maricha, and he threw him 800 miles into the ocean. 800 miles. It's more than 700 miles. It's really a long distance. 800 miles basically is from here to Delhi, more or less. Imagine you take an arrow and you take the target of the arrow and you throw it all the way to Delhi. It's a big shot, you know. When they say it's a long shot, you can really see it's a long shot. So then, so you have this experience and say, look, this is not a good idea. I will not help you. Sorry, Ravana. So that time Ravana went back and said, okay, he doesn't want to help me. But then later on, Shurpanak, his sister came, and at that time she was all mutilated, her nose was cut, so she was extremely angry, and she demanded, I want revenge. You need to destroy this Rama, whom he thinks he is. So then this time, Ravana decided, okay, I have to destroy this Rama. Now it's getting more personal. Already he's destroying different Rakshasas. How many were there? 14,000 he killed? Some 14,000 in Dandakaranya alone, just him and Lakshman. 14,000 Rakshasas he destroyed. And he was considered a man. He was just considered a human prince. But now it's becoming very personal. This is my sister. And so I have to do something. So he again went to Maricha and he gave the whole plan. And Maricha again said, look, don't do that. Don't go there. This will be your end and the end of all the Rakshasas. Rama is not an ordinary mortal. He's not an ordinary king. You will never be able to kill him. You will never be able to defeat him. You will never be able to destroy him. And he was very clear. But Ravana this time, he didn't want to hear anything. So he said, no, look, you have to go there. You'll be my instrument. And otherwise I'll kill you. I'll kill you. Either you accept or I'll kill you. And so Maricha understood, okay, my death has come. I got to die. And, okay, I'll die. But I don't want to be killed by this Ravana. I'd rather be killed by Rama. At least get some moksha points. If I'm killed by Ravana, I get nothing. No. So then he explained the whole strategy. So Maricha, as you know, took the form of a deer. And this was a very special deer. Generally here is a golden deer, but it was not just golden. There is an explanation that the sides, they were golden, but then the underneath was blue, and the legs were white, and the snout was half red, like a red lotus flower, half was blue, like a red, like a blue lotus flower, and its tail was like rainbow color. And on his side, he had so many different gems. So it's not just golden, but it's all full of gems, colorful gems and stones. And his horns were like blue sapphires. And his eyes were shiny like diamonds. So, I mean, if you remember how Maharaj Bharat was attracted by a normal deer, can you imagine how attractive was this deer? So Maricha, again, Rakshasa has a lot of these mystic powers, he went there near the ashram and he started playing near the ashram. Immediately Sita Devi saw it and she became very attractive. Deers are already quite very cute, very sweet looking, but this was extraordinarily attractive. And so she called Ram and Lakshman to see this wonder of nature, and she said, I want it. Please capture, so we'll keep it as a pet. It will give pleasure, just being around, it will be very pleasurable. And then Lakshman said, there are no deers like that around. There's no such a deer in nature. This must be a Rakshasa. Possibly Maricha. He already understood everything. Because such deers are, there are no such deers. And but Sita Devi was very insisting, no, please get it to me. And Ramachandra said, okay, my wife wants it, so I will capture it. And if we find out that it's a Rakshasa, I'll kill it. So then Rama starts following the deer, and the deer takes up super speed. It starts really flying in the forest. And so Rama follows the deer for about 1 hour, but in 1 hour they cover a lot of distance. So at that time Rama becomes very clear, this is Rakshasa, cannot be a normal deer, otherwise it would have already captured. So he decides to kill it, and he takes the arrow, he shoots the arrow finds its target, and Maricha dies. But in the last moment, before completely leaving the body, he shouts in the imitation voice, imitating the voice of Rama, he shouts, because Rakshasa, they have this also the capacity to amplify their voice. It was very, very, very far, many kilometers far. But with this amplification, he say something, Lakshman, help me! Help me! And so Sita Devi hears this from very, very far. And she, this is Ram. Lakshman is completely undisturbed. He says, no, this is not Ram. This is some Rakshasa imitating Ram. He was very clear about it. He never felt any anxiety, any fear. But Sita Devi got very, very, very out of intense love. He thought, something is happening to my Ram. You have to go, Lakshman. You have to go. And Lakshman said, nothing can happen to Ram. Nothing can happen to Ram. It's a trick. It's a trick. Don't worry. Sita Devi became quite disturbed by this intensity of love. And so she started actually insulting Lakshman. And she started saying, so this is your plan. You want him to die so you can enjoy me. All this time you were planning for this. Lakshman was really hurt. It's like it really pierced his heart. You remember, Lakshman never even looked at Sita in the face out of the respect. For him, she was a goddess, which she was anyway. But I'm just saying, she was the respected, respectable wife of his elder brother, and no such thought ever crossed his mind. In fact, he never even looked at the face, he always looked at the feet of Sita Devi. So he was really hurt. How can you say such thing? I mean, and then Sita Devi continued, no, you have to go. If you don't go, means you have some malicious intent. And so then Lakshman really felt forced to go. So Lakshman left the ashram. He knew nothing is happening to Ram, but I have to go. I can't really anymore maintain this position. I had to go. So then Sita Devi was alone, and immediately Ravan appeared on the scene. But how he appeared? He appeared dressed as a brahmana, as a mendicant. And Sita Devi saw him. And in the forest there were different yogis, different sadhus. So it was not something extraordinary. And she, as a kshatriya, immediately took good care of this guest. And she offered food. She offered a seat. Like that. And by the way, many of you have heard the story of Lakshman Rekha, right? The line that Lakshman makes in the ground so the Ravana could not cross it. Sorry to disappoint you, but that story is not in the Valmiki Ramayana. That story comes in different versions of later Ramayana. That story is not there in the original Ramayana. So there was no line, there was no Lakshman Rekha. But anyway, so the Ravana starts glorifying Sita, because now she only heard about her beauty, now he could see her beauty. And he started glorifying her. "You're so beautiful, you're so dignified, you're so aristocratic. Why you stay with this Rama? Look, Rama just he got kicked out from Ayodhya." Of course, it's not exactly like that, but how he presents it, he's basically a failure, he's a loser. "And you're such a queen, how can you stay with this Rama? Look, you can only stay in a cottage with thatched roof, that's all he can offer you? Come with me, I'll offer you a huge golden palace in Sri Lanka, you'll be my queen, I am much better." Sita, again, so angry, she started insulting him. Again, Ravana gets a lot of insults somehow, but he never really understands. And she tells, "Look, you try to do something with me, that's your end. You have no idea how Rama will kill you. You have no idea, this will destroy you and all your dynasty. So don't even think. First of all, I'll never even think that... I'll come to you, I'll leave Ram for you. You are an abominable rakshasa, nonsense, rascal, fool." No, everything, the whole 9 yards of insults. But Ravana then finally, he understood, "I cannot seduce, I cannot conquer, I cannot attract this woman." So he decides to kidnap her. So he takes the ears, he takes the legs, and then he just abducts her. And this is one of the most shocking, really one of the most traumatic episodes in the whole Vedic literature. It's a shock that reverberates through the ages. It's up there with the disrobing of Draupadi. Lord Chaitanya was traveling in South India, and he met actually was invited for lunch by a Brahmana. His name was Ramadasa Vipra. And this Brahmana was totally traumatized by this episode. So although he had invited Lord Chaitanya, then Lord Chaitanya went to bath, his noon bath in the river somewhere. And then they came back and there was nothing to eat. And the Brahmana was sitting there crying, like completely depressed, like incapacitated, unable to do anything. And Lord Chaitanya asked, "Why? Why are you so down? Why are you so sad? What happened?" And the Brahmana said, I can't accept that Ravana kidnapped Mother Sita." And this is millions of years later. Millions of years later. He was in the mood that he cannot accept, he cannot integrate. He was totally psychologically disturbed by this fact that Ravana had kidnapped Sita. And therefore he couldn't even cook, he couldn't even function, he couldn't even eat. He was basically dying of starvation. So Lord Chaitanya kind of did some devotee care, and he encouraged him, and then finally the Brahmana cooked, and so Lord Chaitanya could eat. But then he left, and then he went to different places. He went to Rameshwar, and in Rameshwar he found a copy of the Kurma Purana, which apparently wasn't very popular, means he was not finding anywhere. He finds a copy of the Kurma Purana, and there he finds that actually Ravana did not steal the real Sita. As you all know, he actually kidnapped a false Sita, a shadow Sita, a Maya Sita. And Agnideva took care of the real Sita. So Lord Chaitanya was so enthused that although this was a very old manuscript, he tore the page and he went back to that Brahmana and he told him, look, it was not a real Sita that was kidnapped. It was a false Sita. So don't worry anymore. So that Brahmana was really very much enthused, very much relieved by this revelation. But this is to show that this episode creates really burnt into the Indian or Hindu or Vedic psyche for millions of years. Because it's so low and so sinful, you could not steal somebody's wife. So it's almost unimaginably wrong. Even Lord Chaitanya, once he was in Puri, and he went into the ecstasy of Hanuman, and he started destroying an old wall. I hope it was an old wall. I say wall. I think it was an old wall. He started destroying a wall, thinking this is Lanka's fortifications. And Lord Chaitanya in the mood of Hanuman said, Raman, I'll destroy you. You kidnap Sita, and I will destroy you. So this episode really reverberates through the centuries and the millennia. And here is the time, is the climax, where finally, after months and years of agony for everybody involved, actually, agony for Sita, agony for Hanuman, agony for Ram, agony for Lakshman, agony for everybody, even for Ravana, because for Ravana this was a total defeat. She never agreed to be his wife. So everybody has suffered for many years. So finally here we have Rama in front of Ravana saying, you've been like a dog, you stole my wife, and I'm going to kill you. And I never fail. So in the next verse, Rama kills Ravana. Any questions or comments? Yes, do we have a mic? I see a mic here.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Can you please say how the real Sita was like?
How the what?
How the real Sita, Mother Sita, was replaced with the Shadow Sita, Chaya Sita.
Well, it's a mystical process, so I may not be able to give you like the step-by-step description. You study engineering? Huh? You study engineering, yes. Huh? Long ago. When you are very young. So you study engineering, so it's not exactly something like, point A, point B, join this, join that. No, it's not exactly a mechanical thing. So it's a very mystical thing. We have Sita Devi, who is the goddess of fortune. She's Lakshmi Devi. We have Ravana, who also is very mystical. And we have Agnideva, who is one of the top devatas in the world, in the universe. It's like a sleight of hand. It's like a trick. Sometimes this magician, they show something, they take out tongue, something, they show you something, they pigeons that you don't know where they take it from. So similarly, there must be some sort of mystical occult type of procedure by which Agnidev takes the Sita takes Sita Devi and then puts the different Maya Sita so that Ravana kidnaps her. Don't try to imitate that.
If anybody has a better explanation, we could listen. Okay? Anything else? Yes?
There is no mention of Lakshman Rekha.
Ah.
It came some other Ramayana somewhere. So it seems there are many copies of Ramayana of various authors. And which are the, you know, what are the bona fide Ramayanas? Valmiki is one of the most bona fide.
As far as I know, that's the bona fide Ramayana. I never heard that there are more bona fide Ramayana. That's the Ramayana. So other poets, other scholars, other devotees may have expressed different understanding or may have added things, but that's the Ramayana. There's no, as far as I know, there's no other Ramayana which is bona fide. Ramayana means Valmiki Ramayana. Just like Mahabharata means Vyasadeva Mahabharata. You know, like there is the story of Madhvacharya, because, see, in the course of time, different versions starts populating, we could say, the market, for different reasons. Sometimes there are mistakes in copying the Sanskrit, so words, and then some people have different, call it, ideas, opinions, they try to embellish. So one day there was so many versions of Mahabharata, and Madhvacharya wanted to say, okay, which one is the real one? And then he had so many brahmanas reading with so many different manuscripts, there's different versions of Mahabharata. And because Madhvacharya is the direct disciple of Vyasadeva, he knows the mind of the Guru, so as soon as you hear something a little strange, he said, stop, that's Vyasadeva could not have written that. Okay, so that's off. Then he continued, everybody reading. No, that's off. Sorry, that's not the right version. No, that's not good. It cannot be like that. So finally, by elimination, he got to the real one. So similarly, this Ramayana is around since millions of years, literally, because it's a Treta Yuga, but not this Treta Yuga. I heard it's some, how many? I'm not sure, I don't remember, but so many Treta Yugas. Huh? How many, some of you remember how many Treta Yugas, but many Treta Yugas. So millions of years, different traditions, get added like that. But Ramayana means Valmiki Ramayana. And the very famous Ramacharita Manasa, right? Very famous. Tulsidas, Srila Prabhupada said, that's not bona fide. He said, there are tinges of impersonalism. Now, how heavy are these tinges? I don't know. But Srila Prabhupada recommended we don't mix with the Tulsi Ramacharita Manasa, which is actually almost a canonical literature in North India, because Hindi doesn't have Hindi has many books, but doesn't have many traditional literature. So in North India, people take Tulsi Ramayana, they call it Tulsi Ramayana, but it's not really Tulsi Ramayana. So I would say go, play it safe, just go for the Valmiki Ramayana. That's it.
Well, some other glorifications, like, you know.
Some other?
Many devotees come and they tried to glorify Lord Ram.
So many devotees?
I mean sometimes some devotee tried to glorify Lord Ram.
Glorify Lord Ram. Yeah.
By his voice. So like you know, the other day Mataji was giving class quoting, you know, different South Indian poetry Lord Ram. So I mean how we can be confirmed that whether they are bona fide or not, you know, how is it possible?
Oh, okay. So this is a separate question. Your first question was how many bona fide Ramayan was there? So my answer to that is I know only one bona fide is Valmiki Ramayana. Now you're talking about something different. You're talking about different devotees who have composed poetry glorifying Lord Ram, or stories in which Lord Ram appeared to their devotees. So it's a different thing. We're not talking about Ramayana. And certainly, like Lord Chaitanya, there are a few authorized biographies, like Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavata, and then there are so many songs throughout the centuries in which devotees have glorified Lord Chaitanya. And how do we know that they are bona fide? They are accepted by acharyas, they are accepted by leaders of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, and so we accept, yeah, this is bona fide. We know, for instance, Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur is accepted. He's accepted by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada even said the songs of Narottam Das Thakur are as valuable as the Vedas, if not more. So, there are authorities who understand rasa, who understand tattva, who understand, so when they hear a song, they can recognize this is a bona fide song. But sometimes it's not bona fide. One time, just here at the Lotus Building, there was some scholar from North India somewhere, and he was introduced to Srila Prabhupada. He wanted to join, and he had composed a song for Krishna. And the song went something like, "Oh Krishna, dance and come to me. Oh Krishna, dance and come to me." Something like that in Hindi or Sanskrit. Srila Prabhupada said, "This is bogus. You can't tell Krishna, dance and come to me. That's not the mood." So he may be a devotee. He may be a devotee in the sense of, he's a devotee. He chants the holy name, but these realizations were kind of off. We have so many examples. There was this devotee who came to Puri when Lord Chaitanya was there, and he had composed a song glorifying Lord Chaitanya. And there was a rule. Lord Chaitanya will not hear anything and read any article or essay or poetry or song unless Swarup Damodar cleared it. Unless Swarup Damodar Goswami authorized it. He gave like the stamp of approval. Yes, this can go. Because otherwise they will disturb Lord Chaitanya. Will disturb his feelings. He was very sensitive to nonsense. Huh? So then there was this devotee. It's a devotee. It's not a non-devotee. It's a devotee. So he comes and he had written this song. The song was saying poetry. He was saying, "Oh Lord Chaitanya, you are the life and soul of Jagannath." And the other devotees felt, "Wow, this is beautiful, this is really poetic. The language is so sophisticated." When Swarup Damodar read this, "This is nonsense. You can't say that. You are comparing Lord Jagannath to some lifeless piece of wood. So you're saying that Jagannath has no life, and Lord Chaitanya is the life of Jagannath. I'll never get this to Lord Chaitanya. He would be super angry." So the devotees realize that, "Oops, I didn't catch that. They didn't catch that." So there are many expressions of love
But not all of them are bona fide, not all of them are in line with the Siddhanta. And not all of them are pleasing to Krishna. So how to recognize? They are accepted, if they are accepted by the acharyas, like for instance you mentioned the songs about the South India, Purandara Dasa is accepted in the Madhvacharya as an authority by the Madhva sannyasis. So, you know, these people know at least their philosophy. We don't always agree, but they know their philosophy, they know their sense of rasa, so they're accepted. To some extent, we can discriminate to some extent, but if the acharyas have accepted, then you can say it's bona fide. Okay, does it help? Hare Krishna, Janivas Prabhu.
I think a contemporary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 500 years ago, would that be Tulsidas?
Tulsidas?
Would it be him?
I'm not 100% sure about the dating.
Anyway, it was a time 500 years ago with Akbar, and Akbar invited the devotees, I think Jiva Goswami, maybe Rupa Ros, and I believe it was Tulsidas. Anyway, another famous personality there. So Akbar, he asked them, who is the more advanced of all of you devotees here? So naturally, nobody wanted to say I am. So everyone was quiet. Then after a little while, I believe it was Tulsi. He said, actually, I'm more advanced than the others. So Baba said, how is that? He said, well, I had to learn Sanskrit. Sanskrit, or Hindi was it? I had to learn the language first of the Mahabharata, of the Ramayana. I had to learn the Sanskrit language. Then I had to compile everything like that. Everything, I had to do so much work. He said, but these Goswamis, they didn't do anything. They just had a look and they wrote it down as it was happening. They was writing down, they write down the pastimes of Radha and Krishna as they're happening. So, in a nice way, he said, he was glorifying the Goswamis.
Okay. And this episode is referred where? What is this story from?
I heard it from Dhyaram Prabhu. Maybe from, sounds like a Prajabhashi story. But anyway, in a nice way, he said he was glorifying the Goswamis.
Indirectly. Thank you. Yeah. There are, see, India, there is this this familiarity with especially the Rama and Krishna. So there are certainly many millions of people who have loved them, and but again, the acharyas have not approved of all of them. There's a story, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was traveling in North India, and the devotee said, nearby here there is a famous devotee of Lord Ram. Very, very famous. It's all the region is glorifying him. He's a super bhakta. So they say, we should go and see him. Okay. So they stopped at a railway station. They went to see him. They were in the area. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked this person, okay, so let me understand. Are you a devotee of Ram, just Ram, or of Sitaram? He said, no, 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 I'm only a devotee of Ram. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, he is bogus. You can't accept Krishna without his energy. No? So, now, does it make him a non-devotee? No, he's a devotee, but again, the Siddhanta, the rasa is not right. So there are many, many, many millions of examples. No, there are the openly Mayavadi, openly against, and this and that. Then there are the Sampradaya devotees, and then there are in between. There is this this categories of people who have devotions, they have sentiments, but their siddhanta is not really right. Anything else? We can take one more question. If there is, then we need to close. Mic here, please.
You mentioned that this episode was so abominable of kidnapping of Mother Sita that it's being reverberated through millenniums, I mean millions of years. I wanted to ask about the present day scenario, that where in that scenario no one was agreeable and Ravana kidnapped Mother Sita. But in present day age, when it's done by the consent of both, I mean either the second marriage or third marriage, when the wife is also consenting, the other person is also consenting. I mean, can you comment upon that, how to see that in the...
Are you talking about divorce?
About yes, again, second marriage, third marriage, and...
No, but are you talking about divorce? In other words, these people are married and they divorce...
I'm talking about when the other person is approaching someone's wife, and the wife is also agreeable to the proposal, and then they again married.
It's so sinful. If you have a couple, they're married, okay, and if somebody approaches the wife, say, would you like to run away with me? And she says, okay, it's not good. I mean, do you have any doubt about it? Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai! Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur, Premanandi. Maybe I didn't catch the question.